This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here. He's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in my collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck. No, wasn't it Bismarck? Wasn't it?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opening.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live on this Wednesday evening inside the PTB Man Cave. It is chilly, it is quite cold, but for once, with this very special guest we have on tonight, the weather is pretty stable, pretty solemn, pretty quiet out there. We're not having a storm, we're not having super storms, we're not having hurricanes, we're not having super blizzards, mega blizzards, like we usually have when he's on. And, first, before we get to him, though, let me ring in my PSC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 278 of the Place to Be Podcast. And I will say it is slightly warmer than it was last night. At least it's above freezing tonight, and the roads are, at least the sun melted the roads a bit today. So there's still a patch here and there. So
well,
if you're in the Northeast.
Like 60 this weekend.
53 on Saturday and like 61 on Sunday, which is ludicrous. But you know what? It'll get rid of all the shit, so that's good to know as well. Always a pleasure to be with you, JR, and to Place to Be Nation. And if you follow our vintage vaults, you know, of course, that we are halfway through 2001, which means... And it, as JR mentioned, the wind is calm. The sky is clear. There is no precipitation. There is no howling winds. There's no rattling of houses or anything else.
And hopefully that means the Skype connection will be solid.
And we don't hear cookies chewing.
Well, we'll hear that, I'm sure. It's Christmas.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear that anyway.
And that is, of course, we'll be speaking with Kevin Kelly in a few moments. So Let's just quickly talk. PlaceToBeNation.com, your only place to be in your pop culture world. We have it all. Wrestling, sports, TV, comics, movies. Mm-hmm. Comics is huge on our site right now.
Yes.
Music as well. Of course, up today, we have the best of Kevin Kelly at Please to Be Nation. It's a special 1,000th post that we've had, our 1,000th piece, Scott, at PleaceToBeNation.com.
Yes.
And we put together a little piece that has all of Kevin's interviews and podcasts in the past, and Brad assembled that for us. So pretty cool. Go ahead and check that out if you want to catch up on all the other Kevin Kelly interviews here at PTB Podcast after you listen to this one. We also have up the Kings of Sport podcast. We bless the rains because Big Nasty is heading down to Africa for 2 weeks. So they looked at Jameis Winston's Heisman victory, the new unified champion in the World Wrestling Entertainment. And Marcus and Nate look at the rest of the crazy weekend in sports. Weber Has Issues takes a look at WWE Superstars Volume 1. That's the new WWE comic book.
Yes.
Todd picked that up, and he does a review for us. A great episode here, Scott. Titans of Wrestling looks at Portland, 1980 to 1981. Kelly assumes a hosting seat for this one with Pete and Martin. And they take a look at the Portland territory, 80-81. A lot of Piper. And Titans of Wrestling is a podcast that looks at the late 70s, early 80s WWF, and they do some special episodes on various territories as well, like this one here with Portland. Your full Raw recap is in the books as well. That's up on the front page of PlaceToBeNation.com. And if you missed Monday's episode of the podcast, we chatted with the great Brian Shields and PTB Nation's own Steve Willey. We talked gimmicks. We talked video games, lots of video game stuff, because Brian worked for Acclaim during the height of their, working with the WWF and WCW.
Right.
So we talked about Attitude. We talked about Warzone. Talked about the WCW games as well. So a lot of cool stuff there with Brian. Any wrestling nerds should check that one out. And check out the other interview we did with Brian earlier this year, too. You can just search him on the site, and it'll come up. He more wrestling nerdgasm, as we called it. Just spewing wrestling knowledge. Russell Sellers, the second golden age of comics. As I mentioned, we have tons of comic stuff. And it's unique in that we have all great writers. But they all have a different perspective, and they're all very positive. They look at things in a fair light. They're not just here to bitch about things. And it's really some of the brightest, smartest, most in-depth comic stuff you'll find, I think, anywhere on the internet. And we have an awesome staff with Todd and Greg and Nick and Russell and the rest of the contributors that'll pop in here and there as well with the comic stuff. But if there's one thing besides our wrestling that I'm really proud of on the site, that is the comic work that those guys do, and Tim Capel as well has joined the team. So be sure to check that out if you're a comics fan. Tons of stuff there for you. And it's not even just like once a week or once every other week. I mean, there's multiple pieces a week up there for comic fans. A must check out. Our music section also expanding, Scott. Mm-hmm. Not only has Adam Murray been taking us around the world, looking at all different bands from all different countries and introducing us to new music, we also have Wayne May. He's a hip-hop expert, has his own blog, and he's been doing some articles. He's doing the greatest discography of Nas. Hip-hop history, he says, is the best one. And also, we have our year in review coming. We have Jen Engel, we have Wayne, we have Grant Owens and Adam all doing pieces on their favorite albums, live shows, artists, all different stuff from the year. So check that out as well. Of course, we continue with our combat sports coverage, our UFC with Callum Leslie. He's a credentialed reporter. When they went out to the United Kingdom, he got a press pass and he went and got some interviews, and he has a lot of cool interviews. So if you're a UFC MMA fan, check out Callum's work both in writing and on podcast form. And he has tons of great information for you. Of course, Chad Campbell, Roger Morissette also help him out with boxing and UFC. Chad had a good piece up on the Broner fight from this past weekend and the big problem that boxing's looking at as far as star power heading into 2014. If you like movie stuff, we got Jeremy Nichols gets into the House of Horror each and every Monday. That's there for you. When you wake up Monday morning, Jeremy always has it in, always in depth, a nice look at different horror movies throughout history. And Derek Cornett's going to be doing some recent movie reviews for us coming up, some big movies coming out in the next couple weeks, Scott, and he's going to be checking them out and doing reviews for the site, so that should be fun. Of course, we had the TLC Live blog last weekend. And Total Divas, watching Total Divas now. The whole series is, this run is done, but we have Ben and Jen went back, and of course they did the finale this week. So if you want to go back and kind of relive the season through their eyes, it's a really good read. Jen knows nothing about wrestling, but she likes the show, and it comes through that she knows nothing about wrestling. So her knowledge of wrestling is limited to like the six divas on the show, and then like Fandango, who shows up every now and then, and John Cena and Daniel Bryan, of course. So it's a cool read to see the two perspectives of our two resident divas. Of course, we reposted our podcast with Eddie Edwards. We thought that was pretty fitting because then we'll talk to Kevin about this, but it looks like Eddie may have wrestled his final Ring of Honor match. And we chatted with him way back in June of 2011, Scott, right after he had lost the world title to Davey Richards. We had an interview with him, and we reposted that. It's on the front page, or you can just search Eddie Edwards in our search function at PlaceToBeNation.com. If you're a fan of the show Survivor, Jordan Duncan did a full report card of the season 27. I can't believe they've had 27 of these freaking things.
I know.
And if you're a college football fan, tons of great stuff. BC CS Busters Volume 1, you and Andrew Reich and Todd Gessling went back and you looked at what if the BCS had not existed during these years and what if it had been the tournament. So 98 to 2000 is the first one up, and you guys kind of broke it down to what you thought would have happened if we have the setup this coming next year. And we also had a look back at the BCS, the final curtain call as well, since this is the last year. Games of this generation, 2006 to 2013, Maurice Pogue, if you're a gamer, our gaming fan, we have a lot for you there as well. We have all the reviews of every show each and every week. We have Impact with Steve Willey, You Do Raw, Matt Petticord does SmackDown, Scott Keith with NXT, Dan McGinn with Superstars, Ryan Everett with Main Event, and then of course Off the Top Rope and Answer the 10 Count, two of our great podcasts here as well, as Where the Big Boys Play with Chad and Parv, and Goodwill Wrestling with all the ProWrestlingOnly.com guys. There's tons of niche wrestling podcasts for you, as well as the Kings of Sport that touch on wrestling as well as other topics. So we have tons of stuff for you. PlaceToBeNation.com. Check it out. Check it often. We're updating throughout the day. If you're interested in writing and joining us on the staff, hit us up at info@PlaceToBeNation.com. please follow us at Facebook, facebook.com/placetobenation, and Twitter at @place2bnation. So check us out there. We appreciate all your support. And it being the holiday season, if you're going to be shopping on Amazon, we have a big link on the side of the page. You click that, takes you right to Amazon. You can buy anything you want in the world, and we'll get a little bit of a rub from them and help support the site that way. You know, we're trying to keep things on the up and up. We're not going to ask for any donations or anything like that, but this is just one simple click, and we get a little portion of the proceeds when you make a purchase at Amazon. So it's one extra click for you, but it really helps us out. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support the site, we really appreciate you taking that extra step to go there and click through. So, all right, Scott, why don't we take a break? We come back, we'll have Kevin with us, and we'll get into 2001 WWF and Ring of Honor Final Battle as well. All right, Nation, we're back here from break, and of course, as we promised, making his big return to the Place to Be podcast, our longtime close personal friend, the one and only Mr. Kevin Kelly, the voice of Ring of Honor. Kevin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, guys. Scott, are you a little disappointed that the pay-per-view didn't end with Triple H wearing the title? Are you happy with Randy Orton?
I'm happy that somebody won clean, but we've got 3.5 months for him to stand in front in the Superdome holding every single belt in the whole company. So that's where
it's going, right?
That's where it's going. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yep.
And I'm just wondering if Triple H is going to fly him in on his private jet to witness it and celebrate. Woo-hoo!
Right.
We'll see.
I'll get the same seats that the WCW guys did at WrestleMania 17. I'll be in section 857. So.
You'll be way up in the friggin' dome. All right, Kevin. So it's been a lot going on since last time we talked to you, but Ring of Honor had their final big show of the year with Final Battle out in New York City this past weekend. So what are your thoughts on the show? Where we're heading into 2014, kind of a prognosis. Who's maybe looking to break out? Who you think will be the marquee stars? Adam Cole retained his Ring of Honor world title over Michael Elgin and Jay Briscoe. I was a little surprised Elgin took the fall on that one. I thought Briscoe was going to, so that one surprised me. Overall thoughts on the show? Were you happy with how it went down? I heard the crowd was a little shaky, but what are your thoughts overall?
No, I actually thought the crowd was good. You know, the crowd is the crowd, and they New York doesn't ever fail to surprise me. They cheered when they wanted to cheer. They threw streamers when they wanted to throw streamers, and they were certainly loud as hell during the end. Because Carino and I were standing next to each other after Elgin and Jay Briscoe went through the table, and we couldn't hear each other, and we had headphones on, so it was deafening. When you know, after Matt Hardy came out in the fall, and then here comes Chris Hero, and what a story about Hero. Mm-hmm. So yeah, crazy story about Chris Hero. He gets done with, he does the CZW thing, right? And then gets in his car and drives in a snowstorm to New York. And originally there had been talk about him being the mystery partner for Eddie Edwards. That was true. But then it looked like he really wasn't going to make it. So, ow, son of a bitch.
Is everything all right over there? What's going on?
Fuck, it's a cat. I swear to God. I got this new cat and I'm going to kill him. He just ripped the headset off my head.
I thought maybe Steve Austin came in and threw you into the garage door.
Oh, it was awesome.
You're pathetic.
What a spot.
Get your fucking cat out of here, Kevin Kelly.
So, happy birthday to Steve, by the way. So anyway, we don't know when he's going to show up. If he's going to show up, he walked into the Manhattan Center or the Hammerstein Ballroom 90 seconds before we actually saw him. Was driving illegally up 34th Street, driving over the rumble strips. It was what a tale it will tell. But I think it sets the stage for a very exciting 2014.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of great matchups. And, you know, we've got our first TV taping in Nashville on January 4th. But then our first real big event of the year is Wrestling's Finest on the 25th in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you're going to be there, Justin, and a lot of fans from all over are going to be in town that weekend, so check out Ring of Honor. And the main event was announced earlier today. It's a three-team elimination match with Adam Cole and his mentor, Matt Hardy, against the Briscoe brothers and against Michael Elgin and Chris Hero.
That should be a great match.
Yeah, so there's a lot of intrigue and a lot of twists and turns. And I was thinking through the first three quarters of Final Battle, gosh, this event's kind of a downer if you think about it. You know, it's Matt Hardy's last Ring of Honor event contractually, and then it's You know, Eddie Edwards says goodbye, and it's going to be BJ Whitmer's last match. Oh man, this is a bummer. And then all of a sudden, everything turned.
Chaos.
Jimmy Jacobs and BJ Whitmer pulled the shock of all shocks, and then we go to our main event. We just have all that insanity unfold. So it was, again, top to bottom, I thought it was a great night. You know, you got to say, if you're looking, to rip off Dickie V, stock up, stock down. I just Adam Cole continues to get better every time. To me, his stock is way up. Same with Jay Briscoe. I think Michael Elgin needs some help, and I think having Chris Hero on his side will certainly help. Stock down, Outlaw Inc.
That's too bad. I thought maybe they were going to take the titles at that show, but
I know
Red Dragon still going strong.
Yeah, they really are, and I just don't know if that's going to continue. There were some, I don't know whether or not they're going to be when you go into the crowd and you start throwing trash cans around, luckily nobody was hurt. So, but you just can't do that. And so we'll see what happens there. I think the Young Bucks have to be more than just, and they are tremendous showmen, but, I want to see them with the Ring of Honor money on the line in, against Red Dragon at some point. I know there's a lot of teams that would like to fight them. And what a match with Tommaso Ciampa and Matt Taven. My God, don't blink. Don't go to the refrigerator. Because that thing was over so fast, it just blew my mind. It went from one to the other to the other. And it was the first event in a while. And not that the events had been bad, because certainly as we went through the tournament, we had so many great wrestling matches. But this was one event that when I came back through the curtain, I could feel it in my chest.
Right.
Like, damn, this was something. Like, the adrenaline was really just flowing after that one. And I think this is going to be more of the, after we had the war with Scum, I think, everything sort of ebbs and flows, and everything sort of got kind of peaceful for a while. And we talked a lot about, this era of kind of purity and pure honor and things like that. And it really, the wrestling took center stage, but everything was pretty nice. Everybody got along, and there weren't, we had Michael Bennett, of course, doing what he did, and that brutal war with Kevin Steen was emblematic of that. But other than that, everybody played pretty nice. I got a feeling, kind of the gloves are going to be off here in 2014.
I wanted to ask you quick, because of course I'm always very hard on him in my reviews. Matt Taven, what is your overall analysis of his title reign?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think it got better as it went along. Mm-hmm. I think, he's a young guy in his Ring of Honor career who wakes up as the television champion and now has to figure out his way as a new champion in a new company with a new manager and an entirely new act around him. Everything that Taven had been doing completely changed overnight. So it took him a while to adjust. I thought he got better as it went along. I thought the matches, especially the match that he had against Jay Lethal in Philadelphia, that we saw on television, I think that's where he really started to turn that corner.
Agreed. And I think it had to do with not having Truth out there and all the gimmicks. Like, he was forced to wrestle a match straight up with a great wrestler, and I thought he hung in there. I agree with you 100%. That was a turning point for him.
Right. And again, I still think there will be there will be some critics of Taven, because there was always Truth Martini by his side, much like those that want to, those that criticize Roderick Strong during his world title reign. But I think that, Taven is here to stay. I think it just in talking with him briefly after that match, he's very proud of what he accomplished. I think Ciampa needs to take it that level that we saw Ciampa at. That's the level that he needs to stay at. Because when he's, meek and nice and family guy and all this and that, I don't see that monster. I don't see that killer. But he got very quiet on social media the last few days before the event. I think he went out there and he destroyed Matt Taven and destroyed the HOT in one night. And I think that if he wants to continue to have success, it's got to be at that speed. It's got to be at that mode. And he can go that. He can do that. That's what he needs to do. And it's different than what anybody else will present in Ring of Honor, which makes it better, which makes it good because it's unique. And I think that we'll see different kind of matches out of him. If he wants to be just another guy, he could be just another guy, or he can continue to be a star if he wants to be. And we'll see where he goes from there.
And one last guy you mentioned I just want to touch on quickly is Roderick Strong, who I think has gone under a renaissance the last few weeks, last few months, really. I think he's been maybe their TV MVP for Ring of Honor lately. Do you agree with that, Kevin? I feel like he's really stepped up his game.
Again, his amazing athleticism. I think that when Roderick, much like what we saw with Tommaso at Final Battle, when Roderick is able to do the match that he wants to do, it's as good as anybody has ever done in professional wrestling. You know, Carino and I have made the commentary, and Carino has said he's the fastest guy that he's ever seen in the ring. And the ability to go from second to fifth gear just to, you know, on a dime is truly remarkable and speaks, you know, so much about his athleticism. I think who he is who we think he is. And Roderick Strong is, you know, there's not a lot of dimension and layer with Roderick, at least not that I've ever seen. But that's fine because he can go like nobody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a lot of dimension and layer in Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly.
Yes.
Like, I'm interested in them. And I think they can go and do a lot of different, like, I think they have a game suited for Monday nights. But again, they're such great athletes, and I don't necessarily think they fit that mold either. Roderick is just a damn good wrestler and a fantastic athlete. And Ring of Honor is a place that he certainly, you know, will always have that as a place to ply those wares very, you know, and continue to do that.
All right. Speaking of Made for Monday Nights, thoughts on the departure of the American Wolves?
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to miss, you know, them as a team greatly. I'm personally much closer with Eddie Edwards than I ever was with Davey, because I knew Eddie long before Ring of Honor, you know, knew him when he was wrestling with Sheldon Goldberg and doing shows with Steve Bradley and all that. So I've always had kind of a, you know, soft spot in my heart for this kid that I've known for many, many years, and to see him become as good as he became. I don't know if this is going to be if this is Eddie's last match in Ring of Honor. I hope it is. I really do, because that means they've gone on and done what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I just, again, one guy in Georgia and one person in California won the Mega Millions yesterday.
Right.
And that's the same thing with WWE. There isn't science behind it. It's not about being the best at anything. It's just being in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is like winning the lottery. So can they go and be successful? Absolutely. They could be different and awesome and great, and I think the people will love them. And it's something that WWE doesn't present. Do they want to present it? That I don't know the answer to.
All right, well, there is your catch-up on Ring of Honor, and of course, you can read my recap each and every week at PlayStation.com. I think I talk more about the commentary than the actual action, but that's okay. You can get the action by watching it on television. You can get
a lot of fans will be happy to know that it's the end now of Soaring and Scoring, which was an exclusive for Eddie Edwards.
Yes, it was, and you unloaded one last big one in his.
Did I ever tell the story of how that came? Did I mention that here?
I don't think so. I know you and Carino kind of talked about it during that last, and he was teasing you on that TV.
Yeah,
match.
Carino gives me grief about it, but the way that came about is because that's a line that I stole from the video game SSX Tricky. That the character Eddie used to do when he would hit his special move. And the voice of Eddie in that video game was former WCW World Champion David Arquette.
Nice.
So it all ties back into wrestling and to Vince Russo.
And David Arquette.
And David Arquette, right. So that was the reason why. That was an Eddie special. He had more named moves than anybody else, too.
Well, now it's going to open you up for even to create even more names for these guys.
I know. Well, we had fun because we had the Boston Knee Party. We had the Funplex, the Chin Checker, and, of course, his finish, the Die Hard, and Soaring and Scoring. So that was a lot.
And speaking of Eddie, we talked about earlier, we talked to him back in 2011, right after he had lost the title to Davey. I think it was like the next night we had him on. And it was a good interview. So we have that up on PlaceMeNation.com right now in honor of his final match.
He's the man.
What – Carino, he was on fire. I think it was this past week. There was some joke, and I was just dying. I cannot remember off the top of my head now. The STD jokes kept by, I hope he has Magic Johnson's money, was maybe one of my favorite lines of all time. There was a couple other ones, too. He was just on fire. I can't remember what the hell it was. It was some running joke he had going. Anyway, watch Ring of Honor just for Kevin and Carino's commentary. It's worth it.
Yeah, there's good wrestling action, too.
Yeah, that's all right. But everyone expects that. I'm trying to push the things that people may not be aware of. And that is the great Steve Corino, who in my eyes is the greatest color commentator in wrestling today. So
I think everything has to be in balance. I think there has to be enough action. I think Steve has to balance the comedy with the
– And he does. He does a great job.
He has to trust his analyst side. The guy's had a 20-year in-ring career and 79 tours of Japan, and I don't think he gives himself enough credit for what he can bring in terms of being an analyst.
Right.
So I strongly want to continue to see – listen. Have you guys listen to – to see how he continues to improve week after week.
As long as I keep him in the booth, I will be happy.
Yes, sir.
And, of course, we will be live. We have a contingent. I think there's about 15 to 16 or 17 of us going to the Ring of Honor show, just from the Place to Be Nation family. We'll be down there. So we got Chad flying up from Atlanta for this one. Of course, you spoke to Chad a couple months ago.
Scott's fill-in that was much better.
And that got deleted because Scott came over and just trashed the file, so we'd never hear it.
Yep.
He
sprayed water on it, if I remember.
Yes, he did. And he pedigreed it.
Deal with it.
He extracted the file from the hard drive and pedigreed it. It was really weird.
Yes.
It was good for business.
Yes, it was. So we'll be there in Pittsburgh, and we're going to have you on, Kevin. Hopefully that week before, we'll do a full preview of the show like we did back from the New York show earlier this year. So,
awesome.
All right, let's hop in the time machine, Scott's DeLorean, and we're going to head back to early 2001. Last time we left you, Kevin, we had talked about Armageddon 2000, heading into what I think one of the greatest stretches in company and maybe in wrestling history, and that is the first half of 2001. We had a great roster, great TV, great pay-per-view, and here I'll turn it over to my PIC to launch the questions.
When we started the year, 2001, Kev, Steve Austin was kind of getting his feet back under him. You know, he had a couple of iffy matches with Rikishi and with, with Triple H at Survivor Series, and then the Cell match. When do you feel the real Steve Austin was back in terms of in ring?
I think it was much closer to WrestleMania. And as we go through, as we start to recap, I'll know when it was. But off the top of my head, I seem to remember there being like one moment where I said, aha, everything's fine. And it was, I think it was like a Raw or something like that. But there's ring rust. And with Steve, there was trust issues, trust in his own body. And like he was always worried about getting blown up, always worried about being out of breath, not being in shape enough. And so as he thought more about it and was more concerned about it, then it became more of an issue. So he really needed to get out of his own head. And as he finally did, and we got closer to Mania, then I think it just either he calmed down and relaxed and started to get back in the groove and quit thinking about it so much. And then it wasn't an issue. And then everything was good.
There was one match on Raw or SmackDown. I think it was right after the Rumble, or maybe even go home before the Rumble, where he fought Benoit. And to me, that was kind of like his first. It wasn't the great Benoit one. That was in May. But the one in January, I thought, was kind of like where it first clicked for him. And then, of course, we'll talk about the No Way Out match, which was like his real coming out party.
Right. I think that's the one I was thinking of.
Okay. The Benoit one?
Yeah.
Okay. Thoughts on kind of the reboot with the Dudleys and Chris Jericho? They had kind of been dormant in the back half of 2000. Jericho in the feud with Kane, the Dudleys were just jobbing left and right. It almost felt like we traveled back to early 2000. All of a sudden, the Dudleys win the tag titles. Jericho is back as the IC champ, and they're back at the front of the mid-card. Any particular reason? Were you happy to see them back there? Do you think it was good that they kind of gave them a break at the end of 2000?
Yes, I do. And I know that there was a lot of talk during that time about making sure that and we never even got close to approaching the idea of giving guys time off, but cool them off to heat them up was kind of one of the thought processes at that time. And we really saw that with the Dudleys and with Jericho, because we know that when, you know, as you get time, you got to start lining up, you know, what you're going to do with WrestleMania. So they get into some more high profile stuff and they start to get more focused. And now everything kind of winds into form as we get to, as we get through January.
Speaking of Jericho winning the IC title, maybe one of the best matches of the year we were right out of the gate with, and that was, of course, when he defeated Chris Benoit in that ladder match. What were your thought memories of that match? Easily one of the three or four best of the first half of the year.
It was anytime you had those two on the card against one another, you knew it was going to be something special. They blasted each other and always had that, you know, gentleman's agreement, not in the face, but you want to crack me as hard as you can across the back or in the chest or across the back of the head, man, it's all good. Let it go. You know, and that from their time in Japan, that's kind of the style that they were comfortable working, and they liked to do that with each other, trusted each other, and again, the result was just an amazing match.
When you rank that in the kind of pyramid of ladder matches to that point, of course, you know, we had the Razor Shawn, both of their additions. We've had the tag team ladder matches since. We had Triple H and The Rock in Madison Square Garden. Where do you kind of rank this one as a fan?
I'm not a fan of ladder matches. I think that you know, I thought that this one was probably right below Razor and Shawn. And I think Razor and Shawn's match, if you look back, it really, to me, it stands up over time, but it was so new, it was so different.
Mm-hmm.
And it was groundbreaking in many results. But I just enjoyed the struggle to get to the ladder.
Yeah.
As opposed, you know, with those two, again, it was more about what they did without the ladder than what they did with it. So it's almost like that ladder. To me, it while it adds certainly a different element, it takes away from, you know, what otherwise would be just this awesome wrestling match. You know, Benoit and Jericho don't need a ladder. They could just go out there and go, and I'd be perfectly happy.
And I almost look at it like a lineage to me, because, and I name dropped those few on purpose, because I feel like other ladder matches are spot fest, but I feel like Razor and Shawn is like the grandfather. Rock, Triple H was kind of the father, and then Benoit Jericho is the kid there in that trilogy, because those three ladder matches, to me, are the ones that weren't about the high spots, weren't about us flying around the ring. They had more of a psychology and used the ladder, like you said, as a struggle, as a weapon, but not as just part of an aerial show.
Yeah, it's more about, you know, I remember there was a lot of work, if memory serves me correctly, where the ladder would be used like as a battering ram to the midsection, right? Mm-hmm. There was a lot. There seemed to be a lot of play with it that way, as opposed to it being a lot of teeter totter or a lot of up and down. You know, it's more about that, the clank of the metal and the struggle, the position to be able to deliver that offense, to counter, to move out of the way. Yeah, so it was different. You rank the Triple H Rock ladder match that high?
No, I'm just saying the lineage of style to me. That's like in as part of that lineage of the not a high flying, not a spot fest, more of the psychology driven. Of those three, that's the third. It's the worst.
And so different, yeah, and so different because of, you know, what they were, what like the three tag teams did. You know, that was a different kind of, you know, it wasn't about the struggle, it was about the setup and the fall down. You know, what pyramid can we build? What thing can we do and fall into? And how can we make Jeff Hardy fall off of something really tall? So, yeah, those are certainly they're all unique in their own respect. I never hated the Rock Triple H one, but I just found it funny that you just are giving begrudging anything good that Triple H.
Yeah, it was all right. You know, it was okay.
It was all right.
It was all right. It's just on constant loop in Scott's apartment, that's all.
You're pathetic.
It's like in a museum when you go in and they keep playing the same like thing about the Native Americans. You know, it's just playing all day long. That match is just playing constantly in a little TV in Scott's wall, just with a little plaque next to it that explains why the match is existing and everything.
The Native Americans.
The Triple H Museum in Norwalk, Connecticut there.
Well, he has the 7-foot bronze bust of Triple H. You know?
Yep. I'm actually wearing the Terror Rising robe right now. So.
And that's all he has on.
Kevin, yes.
One of my favorite celebrities to ever be involved in the World Wrestling Federation, and also a Hall of Famer, if you believe it or not, and that is Drew Carey. At the 2001 Royal Rumble, entered in, and a guy that clearly didn't know anything about what he was talking about, but actually seemed to care and put the energy in and the effort in, which I thought was good. What did you think of Drew's Rumble spot?
He was there because WWE was helping promote his comedy pay-per-view.
Yep.
And, again, it was just any time you open the door to celebrities, I just always rolled my eyes. I never saw how it helped the WWE once. I never saw how it did anything for business. It just took a spot from somebody else that could have been in there. Now, for what they did, I thought they did it very well. And there was, you know, very few times, and again, you could see how the tail wags the dog now, and how we had that, you know, ridiculous segment a couple of weeks ago on Raw with Michael Strahan, right? But Drew Carey feeding, you know, and getting chokeslam, oh, come on, that's awesome. You know, the only other person that really, of course, Kane was the monster in that one and eliminated. Didn't he eliminate a bunch of guys, or was that Austin?
Yeah, it was Kane. He had a monster run.
Yeah, yeah. But the only one that I ever remember other than that was Honky.
Yes.
And the other... I remember Kane and Austin being the last two. I remember Drew Carey being in it, and I remember the Honky Tonk Man. And it was in New Orleans.
Was Drew respectful? Was he cool to deal with, or was he aloof at all?
No, he was a very nice guy. He was very low key. He didn't have an entourage with him. He was very celebrity like. He was kind of like what you see on TV, just a, you know, pretty chill guy. So, cool. and from that regard, you know, he was great. And I remember, before that, like Ben Stiller was a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And came in and just, you know, again, what was Jeff Jarrett going to do? He's going to put him in the figure four, of course.
Right.
So, yeah, that was another celebrity that I remember him, like, standing out and being real cool. Oh, speaking of celebrities, at Final Battle, one of the people in the crowd was Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker's son, who's 10 years old and is a big Ring of Honor fan.
That's cool.
Yes. So he was there. I don't know who brought him, because neither of his parents were there. So nanny or somebody, who knows? Anyway, he was backstage hanging out, and I shook his hand briefly during intermission. So it was pretty cool.
Hmm.
Nice little kid.
Now, speaking of Kane, who you mentioned a moment ago, an epic run in the Rumble, 10 guys eliminated. What was behind that? Who came up with that idea? What was the thought process behind making Kane the Jesus push of the match?
Again, a lot of the Royal Rumble is Pat Patterson, and I think it fit in with everything that we were doing with him at the time. He is just he's an incredible athlete, somebody of his size. And yeah, I think that there's always that one. They do try to tell that one story, you know, the one guy that goes on an amazing run, whether it's coming in at the number one or two spot and going the distance or going a long way, or in this case, like Kane. He's just, again, just a remarkable man, and I have just incredible respect for him as an athlete.
It seemed like good timing, too, because he really needed some rehabbing after the whole flip-flopping, after the little stupid feud with Taker, and then kind of a weird heel run. I thought it was a good way to reestablish him as a monster again.
And again, I think when you have people, I go back and forth on this. Somebody like The Big Show, somebody like Kane, that's been, you know, flip-flopped, as you said, changed this one, that one. Now he's laughing. Now he's funny guy. Now he's serious monster. Now he's psychopathic killer. But I think we give him a pass, no matter what it is. And as much as it bothered me, you know, taking him out of the mask, didn't they eventually put him back in the mask, right? So it allows everything to kind of go full circle, mm-hmm. right? So, again, I think when you do – just like what I said earlier about the Dudleys and Jericho, you can – cool off to heat up. Okay, we got to start taking care of Kane now. We're managing our assets well, and we know that if we put him in this position, he's going to deliver. And if he doesn't deliver, then we'll find somebody else who can deliver in that position. Wrestling can be very simple when you allow it to be. And I think that this time is where you see just the overflow, the wealth of riches that WWE had with stars and great wrestling talent. And just a roster that was primed and ready to do anything that you asked them to do on any given night.
And one of those prime stars, as we mentioned earlier, was Steve Austin making his return. Do you agree that him winning the Rumble for the third time was the best idea? I mean, obviously where they were headed for Mania, it kind of had to happen. But do you think he was hands down the choice here?
Yeah, and I think it's always, like we had talked about the year before, you know, when there's a predictable winner, it's not as dramatic as that surprise upset, you know, Ric Flair win. But it's a win that nonetheless needed to happen. People love the result. And what you saw with Kane and Austin in those final few moments, I mean, that's another great memory that I have of that match as well. You know, it's just their final exchange that led to Kane finally being eliminated.
And I think what the key here was that Rock wasn't champion yet, so there was still a pretty good chance that he could win as well. I think everyone kind of knew they were heading towards Austin, Rock, and Mania. We'll get to that, but I don't think we knew who would be in what role. So I think that helped here as opposed to the year before, where it was clearly obvious that Rock was going to win.
It was, and again, it all led back to, all led to that one line that Steve said, you know, on the go home right before WrestleMania, I need to beat you, Rock. I need to be the WWF champion. So got to lay the groundwork at the Royal Rumble. And the thing with Steve is there wasn't a lot of accidents. There wasn't a lot of, oh, well, we just happened to luck into this thing. He was very, opinionated about, and I say this, but he had a lot of good ideas as far as where he saw things going and where he saw it, you know, progressing over time. So, you know, this, then this, then this, then this. And that made it, that's what helped make it so good.
Now, the other angle that was kind of the underlying storyline was between Vince and Stephanie and, Trish and Linda on meds and Regal as the commissioner. Their match at No Way Out, and I want to talk about No Way Out overall in a moment, but Trish and Stephanie obviously was a match that on paper at the moment, people were like, oof, that's not going to be a fun 6 minutes. Were you surprised at how good their match really was, though? Because here's Trish, who, as 2000 was progressing, was slowly getting there, and then Stephanie hardly ever wrestles. Were you surprised how good their match was in February?
No, I was not, because it was... And I say that like because they came through and I remember, you know, there being a nice round of applause for how that, you know, for them as they came through. But they worked hard. And I know that there was they had a lot of help and they had a lot of good people around them. I can't remember if Dr. Tom was a part of it, but I'm pretty sure that he was. And, so I know they put a lot of time, effort, and energy into making sure that match was as good as it could be. I've always thought Stephanie was fine in the ring. I thought that both her and Shane were much better than Vince. And that whenever they had to wrestle, it was always like, oh, okay, I could see that. That's fine. You know, it's not like I'd want to see it all the time. But for what they were able to do, it was certainly, you know, much better than it could have been.
Trish's development at this point, did you think by now she was really starting to click and get it? Because the first year, a little up and down, a little shaky, seems to really be settling in now and wanting to take on more of an active role. And also, what did you think of the whole Vince angle? I mean, was it typical Vince ego stroking, or did you think it was actually entertaining?
It wasn't entertaining for me, but they weren't trying to, you know, they weren't going after my dollar. So, there was always Vince ego stroking. That's how that's how Vince Russo convinced him that he should wrestle Steve Austin on TV. You know, he had to put that ego over, and Vince wanted to hear it because he wants his ego stroked. So, yeah, it's an opportunity for him to be larger than life and be this, you know, megalomaniac, billionaire, you know, sex crazed.
You get to make out with Trish. I mean, that's not a bad perk.
Yeah, right. You get to make out with Trish. I'm going to book that, right? I don't know. It's not my cup of tea. I don't care about any of that family drama crap. But that's, again, they're not looking for my vote.
Well, speaking of family drama, night after No Way Out pay-per-view, or shortly after, the cat, Stacy Carter, was let go. Her husband, Jerry Lawler, walked out with her. what is the storyline? What is the story behind this? It seemed like Kat was actually getting a push. All of a sudden, they say, we got nothing for you. Did they know King was going to walk? Was this a reason just to dump King? Or did they really just not want the Kat around and did not expect Lawler to walk as well?
I can't remember what the hell happened exactly, but no, they didn't want Jerry to leave, and I don't think they expected Jerry to leave. This opened the door for Paul Heyman to come in. I know that wasn't the hope, and that wasn't the plan, but that's what happened. I can't remember what the hell she did or what she was doing that pissed somebody off or pissed everybody off. You know, was she just being a douche in general? Was there one extreme episode of douchiness? I don't know. But, you know, like I wrote about it in my WrestleZone column last week, you know, because they were making a big stink for 5 minutes about AJ and Michelle Beadle, mm-hmm. I guess, getting into it at the, you know, tribute for the troops. And I, anytime something like that happens, I'm like, oh, thank God, now I have something to write about, you know, because that is such a struggle to write that column, because I literally don't want to just hate on the business all the time.
Right.
But I find it hard. Like, I love doing this show because I can look back at, and I can put things in historical context and I can say, wow, this is what was going on at this time and this is what wound up happening and how things changed. If you had to have me talk about this past week's Raw, I could talk about the great main event. I could talk about, you know, the match I saw with CM Punk and the
Shield.
The Shield. Yep. That was very good. But like Mark Henry and Biggie Langston was terrible. You know, Antonio Cesaro, I hope he gets paid four times.
Yes.
Because he needed to get paid for his partner who stinks and for those two stiffs on the other side of the ring that he worked with. Were you watching just how brilliant he was in putting Biggie in every right position every step along the way?
I mean, he needs to be a money star for them. It seems like they're finally kind of getting it. And he seems to be trending up instead of just doing nothing like he did for most of last year. But, I mean, God, that guy's going to be a star if they do it right.
Yeah, and he's just so damn good. And I don't know if they appreciate ring generals like they should or used to be, but my God, that was brilliant. But anyway, the rest of it, it's like, I can't stand it. And, you know, the announcing is just so – JBL needs to either speak up or be quiet.
And it sucks because he was so great, and he's just kind of regressed. And just, I think it's just the style that they're forced to do. But, man, when he first did this run in 06, 07, and 08, he was phenomenal on commentary.
Right.
And now it's just it's depressing because I was so excited when he came back, and this just hasn't been what I hoped.
And I appreciate the fact that those, you know, that John and Michael Cole have good chemistry together. They get along well. They're friends away from wrestling. That's cool. Friendship makes interesting commentary. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
But – there's just, you know what I mean? There's just no substance to it. But anyway, so when this AJ and Michelle Beadle thing happened, I wrote about how Sonny and Luna got into it one time because Luna came through the curtain after her and Sable had a match on Raw, and Sable got all the applause, and nobody said anything about Luna. And whether it was intentional or not, Luna, who was always had very fragile emotions, took it very personally. And by the time she got down the bottom of the stairs at gorilla position and walked into the dressing room, Sonny, who was pilled out of her mind or something at the time, said something to Luna, innocent, but said the wrong thing at the wrong time, and Luna snatched her and threw her out of the room. And then Road Warrior Animal was standing there, like right outside the door, as Sonny goes flying past him. And Luna comes outside, and she looks at Animal and claws his chest like a tiger and then runs away. And I remember Jim Ross saying to me, you know, about the girls, that they're all in one dressing room because that's the way it is, and it'd be great if you could separate them, but you can't. We don't pay them any money because when we try to pay them all the same, because they're all going to be catty and jealous with one another if one gets paid more than the next. And if one gets too big for their britches, then we need to say goodbye to them because we can't have that kind of drama. Because that's where problems, you know, ensue. So getting back to the thing about the Kat is I can't remember if there was one episode or it was just a culmination of a lot of things. But it was just time to say, you know, goodbye to her, and Jerry wound up leaving too.
Hmm. Now, No Way Out overall is considered by many to be probably the greatest secondary pay-per-view in company history. Do you agree with that?
No. I would say the Vince Steve match from Valentine's Massacre February 2 years prior was better than.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. It's a great show as well. Absolutely.
It's a flip of a coin. Mm-hmm. It's personal tastes.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
But
what are your thoughts of the three stages match of the show? Austin and Triple H.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, again, it was great. It was terrific wrestling. And sorry, Scott, anything that Triple H is on, I just, you know?
Including HGH.
Right?
No, that's your boy.
He's a B-plus guy. He's B-plus.
That's fine.
That's it. So, you know.
Scott
measures
his love of Triple H in inches, not grades.
You know,
what the hell have you turned into? My God.
What Vince and Austin were able to pull off in that cage match in February in Memphis. Come on. Come on.
It was tremendous. Absolutely.
Big Show coming up through the ring. Come on. It's awesome.
We'll get to Big Show in a minute. We'll get to Big Show in a little bit because a lot's changed since that moment for him, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Time to play the game.
What'd you think of the main event, Rock and Kurt? Did you like their chemistry?
Oh, yeah. It was, great confidence that I had. There were some, you know, like when we were watching, Shawn Michaels' main events, you know, a couple of years prior. You were never quite sure what you were going to get with Shawn, you know. Was it happy Shawn? Was it sad Shawn? Upset Shawn? Brett, same thing. And with Steve, it was always, you know, you always knew you were going to get something solid. The guys that were there at the time, you know, we knew we were getting solid main events. And like you'd asked about Trish and her improvement along the way, it was just sort of accepted how good she had gotten, much like Kurt, you know, it was just, yeah, they got it. They were just sort of savant-like in how they adapted to it. Different backgrounds, of course. Kurt having to overcome, I think, more of it just because of being an amateur wrestler. But yeah, by this point they were well established, and whatever you put them in, I was like, yeah, I'd believe them. You want to do, you know, Stephanie versus Trish? Yeah, 6 minutes? Absolutely. I think it'll be great. Kurt, main event with Rock? Damn right. Go kill it. I know it's going to be fantastic.
What do you think of Kurt's title run? If you had to give it a quick grade.
Was he started doing the comedy then, right?
Yeah, mainly, yep.
Not good. Not good. Not good. You know, don't... Anything with comedy is... I just don't...
Now you're crushing his hopes and dreams.
Well, no, I mean, Kurt would do more of the comedy in the summer, but to me that was different comedy, and we'll talk about that, I guess, probably next time you're on, with all the stuff with Austin and Vince and the hugging and the cowboy hats and everything.
Like, well, that was ridiculous. What were we doing here in 2001?
At this point, it was just kind of the goofy Kurt. Like, not... That was, like, designed over-the-top goofiness. This was just like, hey, Kurt's kind of a goofball kind of thing, and still serious. I mean, they portrayed him as a serious guy, though, when it came down to it. He wasn't, you know, the maniac he'd become where it was all intensity. But he thought he had a decent mix here early on.
Yeah, anything that he did, I just thought it was a breath of fresh air. And you don't realize how much smaller he was than the guys he was working with. But 3-4 inches shorter than Rock and Triple H. But boy, he carried himself so big, you know? So, yeah, the more ridiculous he got, the more I checked out on Kurt.
Now, Well, my looking at my list here. You flummoxed us, Kev.
Well, we've been all over the place. It's the take.
Well, I know, but you crushed my hopes and dreams every time you're on. But for once you crushed.
I thought it was your turn.
Now, what am I supposed to say? That he was awesome and he was great.
No, I didn't say you had to do that.
I thought he excelled far beyond expectation, but he didn't have enough backbone to stand up for his own self and say, no, I don't want to be portrayed as an idiot. So I don't know whether anytime anybody is submarined, I think that there is nefarious forces in effect, Triple H, at work trying to, you know, deep six somebody's push. Triple H.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that. Is there any truth to the rumor that the Brothers of Destruction, The Undertaker and Kane, speaking of guys nobody could stand at the moment, were supposed to wrestle Rikishi and Haku at WrestleMania before Rikishi got hurt? It seemed like they were starting to kind of gel as a team, and that was a possible match for Houston. Any truth to that?
I don't. You know, that's the first I'm hearing of that. I do know that part of the reason why my understanding of the reason why they were eventually broken up, Kane and Taker, was because they were too good. That nobody could beat them. That they were just so much bigger and better than everyone that while it was great for Taker to be in a tag team at this point, they were just, who's going to beat them? Were the Dudleys going to beat them? Were the Radicals going to beat them? Was anybody from WCW going to beat them? Please. You know, it's just too good. So I think that was part of the reason why they had to break him up. But as far as Rikishi and Haku, yeah, it could have been. Eventually to where we got with the matches that we had in Houston, I think that Triple H and Taker was a little bit better than the Brothers of Destruction versus Rikishi and Haku.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think things worked out for the better. And I mean, that would have been very anticlimactic. I remember it being a rumor at the time. And maybe it was a false one floated out there, but it just seemed like maybe they were heading that way with Rikishi and Haku just teaming up a lot. And they actually had a pretty good, I think it was like a first blood match on SmackDown or something, and that was kind of it. Haku, well, what did you think of Haku's return? I was always a big Haku fan. I liked him in WCW. I was excited when he came back here, but he kind of flames out quickly. Did you think he'd ever go anywhere? You surprised they didn't put him in the hardcore division? It seemed like it would have been a fit for him.
Well, yeah, I remember when he signed, it was just that his WCW contract had lapsed and we were able to, you know, pluck him. And I remember just complimenting Jim Ross on getting this done because it was a steal. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a veteran guy and so tough and so entertaining. And I was always a big fan of his work and just, you know, the real story of the tongue and death grip, you know, where that comes from. And you guys know that story, right?
Let's hear it, just in case our listeners don't.
Well, I don't know if he invented it during a bar fight, but basically, when Haku would get, you know, in the zone, shall we say, and it'd be time to leave, and he might not want to leave, for example. Some would, you know, maybe the bartender or bouncer might make the suggestion, hey, Mr. Haku, it's time to go. If he wasn't ready to go, he wasn't going to go. So somebody smarts off to him at some point, and then all of a sudden they find themselves with Haku's index finger and middle finger on one side of his windpipe and his thumb on his other side, on pressing on that nerve, sunk deep into his neck. And he ain't letting go. And so that's when the shark eyes, as Terry Taylor described him, comes over Haku, and you can't do anything to him. And 15 bouncers and mace and billy clubs, and you know, you're not going to get him off of him.
So is he the toughest?
Yes, absolutely. Everybody else is second place to him. From that generation in that time, there might be somebody tougher now. There might have been somebody tougher back in the day, but then there wasn't anybody tougher than Haku. That was it. There was some debate on that. I remember having that debate, like with Bradshaw and Farouk and Teddy Long and some others. You know, Godfather was in that conversation. Taker was in that conversation. But Haku got my vote. So Not something you'd ever want to see. You don't ever want to see that because it's just violent. And
I am sad we didn't get one last Vince McMahon Haku like back in the day. That was the only misfire on this run, I think.
I think when Jerry Lawler left, I think Vince probably would have been the saddest, you know, because he would always see Jerry, the king.
We need more Vince introducing, like, before the pay-per-views, like he used to do the old Survivor Series and Royal Rumbles and everything. That's what we need more of, I think.
I think he definitely could do more of that.
Do you think he ever could have went back to just being, like, I always had this, and it was mainly to remember they do the ECW angle where he went crazy and he was sitting in the rocket chair and he had the skull cap on and just lost his mind after he got his head shaved. I always wanted him to, like, get amnesia and forget everything that happened from like 97 on and just wake up and think it was like 1993 and he shows up on Raw in his powder blue suit and just commentates like nothing had ever changed since like 93. Wouldn't that have been a phenomenal angle?
Kind of like Steve Corino never acknowledging that anything with Scum has ever happened. Like,
exactly.
Completely, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that would have been great. And sure, the time warp, I'm a big fan of the time warp.
That would have been awesome. Just comes out in that suit and talking about the Quebecers, you know? Would have been fantastic.
I think that there's a part of that in all of us that announce, because wrestling fans, to me, professional wrestling is comfort food, and I know I've said this here before on the show, and that fans want the wrestling that they grew up with. So for a lot of people, Vince is that voice. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, Jim Ross is that voice. For a lot of people, Gordon Solie is that voice. Or
Michael Cole.
No one remembers him. Oh. You know, and I think that I think we all have to play that role, that people know what wrestling is, and the more not campy that we make it, but the more of a throwback that we make it, mm-hmm. I think we can always do that. I think that there is an expectation, a preconceived notion, if you will, about a wrestling announcer in a tuxedo, ruffled shirt, completely out of style, who is sort of bombastic in his voice and his mannerisms and overselling, you know, like much like car salesmen. And a lot of times throwback campaigns really get over because that's what people like. That's what they remember. And it takes them back to a different time and place. So
it's crazy to think too, Vince in the 70s and early 80s, mid 80s, before the expansion, really. I mean, he would call shows on his own.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was pretty good, too.
And some crap wrestling, too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
God. I mean, I was always a Vince commentary fan, but again, that's when I grew up. I mean, I loved Gorilla, but when I really became a fan, it was like mid-90, and Vince kind of took over shortly after that. It was the voice for most of my formative years. So yeah, I'm on board exactly with what you're saying, that Vince, to me, in the booth, is very nostalgic.
Sure.
And Tony Schiavone.
And Schiavone, too, right?
I feel like he's so underrated.
I completely agree with you about Schiavone. You go back and you listen to, you know, fans out there, go back and listen to WCW pay-per-view events from mm-hmm. the mid-80s, 86, 87, and then he left for a time, I think, in 89. So say 86, 87, 88. Wow. He didn't do all of them, but he was there for a lot of them
mm-hmm.
and was damn good.
And he was even good after that when he came back, I thought. Up until the NWO stuff is really when he started to kind of mail it in.
Right. I don't know why. I never knew why.
I think...
Hey, let me ask you a question. You guys know anything about cats?
I don't like them. I know that.
I don't either.
All right. If a cat bites an electrical cord that's plugged into the wall, will the cat get electrocuted?
You don't want me to answer that.
Me neither.
I don't know. I mean,
all right. So what you're saying is he'll be fine.
Sure.
Okay.
Is he breathing?
Here, kitty, kitty. Here, kitty.
Give him one of the Kevin Kelly Christmas cookies.
You sound like Saturn talking to the mop.
All right, we got a lot left here, Kevin. We spent a lot of time in the XFL last time you were on, so we don't have to get too far into it. But did you watch any of the games? And what was the fallout from Week 1 when Saturday Night Live got delayed and Lorne Michaels flipped his shit? And what was the reaction from all that?
Again, like I'd said last time, I was the one guy that said, I think this is a bad idea. And I was right. First week, yeah, interested. Second week, yeah, interested. Third week, ooh. How many more weeks of this is there? And by the end, it was merciful. And I had said last time, you know, I'm doing a voiceover read for Superstars. And, you know, the line that was written by Steve Finkelstein was, you know, this weekend is the last weekend of the XFL regular season. And I inserted, please hold your applause. And so, and just busted up, you know, the audio producer and Steve. But that was the feeling. It was like, let's get this over with.
Yeah.
What a horrible abortion this was. I didn't care what freaking Lorne Michaels or any of those idiots thought. It's live sports. How are you going to control when it ends? Mm-hmm. It's crap football that's going to take 4 hours.
Okay, that's it for the XFL. We spent a lot of time on it last time.
Thank God.
2001 also seemed like there was a early 2001 seemed like a resurgence of the hardcore championship when Raven got involved. The matches seemed to be a little less comedic and more intense. Did you think that was the case? And when the Big Show started to get involved, did that seem like a demotion for him?
It was much better, I thought, when Raven came in. It, you know, getting away from the comedy was a good thing. Everything the Big Show did was sort of a demotion. He just disappointed so many people and never lived up to expectations. Again, Big Show and Mark Henry, in my mind, were two of the is Mark Henry a Hall of Famer?
I mean, it depends what criteria you're using. If you're using their current criteria, yeah, I would say probably.
He's the ultimate compiler.
Right.
He's like Vinny Testaverde and Tim Brown rolled together as one.
Don't you hate on Vinny.
Such a compiler. Give me a break. You know, neither of those guys really ever did anything of substance that was memorable.
That's the seminal vitriol coming out right now.
Well, again, I can talk. We escaped prosecution. We're number one ranked, and we're in the national championship game. Suck it.
Hey, that's a Triple H line.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you don't mind stealing his lines, though, do you? Why? What was wrong with Big Show? What was the problem? I mean, we can all say, oh, God, he got fat. But it had to have been more than that. What was really the problem?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, probably a lot of psychiatrists could make a lot of money off of investigating, you know, what really was. Was it that he was unloved? Was he not loved enough? Was he not happy in his own skin? Did he not like what he was doing? Did the guaranteed money spoil him? I don't know.
How about not being inserted in the main events quick enough? I mean, there's a guy that – I know Rock got – I mean, we'll turn back the clock quickly, but yeah, sure, Rock got his rematch at Backlash 99 after Steve won the title at 15. But after that, instead of Taker, should Big Show have been inserted as the next big monster heel main event challenger for Austin?
Didn't they push to the
main event faster?
Hadn't they already taken care of that when Steve beat him on Raw?
Sadly, yes.
Yeah, I mean that was
answer the question. That was a dumb idea too.
Yeah, but so what happened? Was it the chicken or the egg? Was it that he was fed to Steve because we needed to have the Giant get Steve over bigger, or was it there was a belief that the Giant was not as good and needed to be broken down a couple of notches? I don't know. Was he a product? You know, was he a figment of our imagination in WCW? That he wasn't as good and hadn't improved as much as he did, but he certainly, I mean, God, he had ballooned up so big from where he started and when he left, and then he got himself back into shape again, only to gain more weight. It's very frustrating, and I don't know. I don't know whether it's an emotional thing, or it was whether it was laziness, or whether it was depression. Who knows? Who really knows? All I know is he got much better after he finally matured. And I know when he met his girl, Beth, and I think they're still together today. That's when he seemed to calm down and he seemed to mature a little bit. So everything, you know, I guess you get older, you get a little smarter, you make mistakes when you're young, you're handed a lot of things right off the bat, and he signed a $1 million contract, you know, with WWF and probably thought that was it. He was all set. He'd finally made it to New York, which is what Hogan had told him the whole time he needed to do. So, okay, I made it. I'm good now. Wait a minute. There's more. Yeah, you got to keep working, kid. Wait, I got guaranteed money. I don't have to work. Maybe. Who knows?
All right, around this time, too, ECW closed. Any memories of that promotion? What led to Heyman coming in? Was it a plan all along? Or was it a last-minute scramble when Lawler walked out with the cat to bring him in? Was it supposed to be a permanent thing or just a week-to-week at the time?
It was a nothing was ever permanent with Paul Heyman. This was baked in the cake a long time ago because Vince had been paying Heyman $1,000 a week, I think, since like 1996 or so. He was on WWF payroll and WWF had no money. I was kind of sad when ECW folded. But when Heyman came in, I was glad to see him because I knew how great he was and how smart he was. How good of a producer he was, how good of an announcer he was. I was sad that the company that he had built and worked so hard for came to an end. A lot of good guys came from there. WWF was thankful because, you know, getting Taz and Dreamer and the Dudleys and Raven, that was good. That was real good. Those guys helped out a lot. They made things better and being able to tie all the pieces together. And I know we'll talk about the Invasion, my favorite night on Raw, for about 3 minutes. And then I went from jumping up and down to throwing my hat on the floor, vomiting. But it was, for those 3 minutes, man, it was great. But anyway.
Instant upgrade in the booth, Waller to Heyman?
Now, I'll give you the... Vince liked to tweak people, and Jim Ross was somebody that he loved to tweak. And I think he knew that Heyman could get under JR's skin better than anybody else. So I think Vince probably put the bug in Heyman's ear to make sure he gave JR just a whole lot of grief. That tickled him a lot. That tickled Vince a lot. And, you know, it was no surprise that when Vince gets or when JR has a blow up at ringside and Heyman's back in the company, you know, that immediately gets reported to the dirt sheets. Like, oh, I wonder who could have reported that. You know, come on, give me a break. So, but anyway, I think all those things were done for a reason. Not nice. Not nice at all.
Yeah, but he was just better to listen to at that point. I mean, from a fan perspective. I thought he did a much better job during this time frame, especially, you know, we're going to talk about WrestleMania in a minute. I thought Heyman made that show as great as it is, even more memorable. Like, I don't feel it would have been as great with Lawler at that point.
I do agree with you. Absolutely. I think that's what he made. I think especially on the undercard matches, he made those seem just enormous and made the whole event sound bigger. Mm-hmm.
Well, with ECW closed, obviously some of the guys came over. Two of them debuted on Raw, Rhino and Spike. What were your thoughts on their debuts?
Remember, it was the same night they came in.
Same night.
Hell, I don't remember. Help me.
Well, it was a memorable one. They had the tag title match, and Rhino came out and helped Edge and Christian win the tag titles. It was a surprise. And at the end of the night, Spike came out and made a surprise debut, and they had the second title match and then helped the Dudleys win the titles heading into.
Yes, that was cool. I remember that now. Very cool. Instantly liked. I had met Rhino several years ago because he had had WWF dark matches before he had started in ECW. And Spike I had never met before, but just thought that it was, you know, that the guys from the, you know, Land of Extreme were coming into WWF. I just thought that was kind of cool, you know, and it was really like, was kind of like, you know, your dream match scenario. You could start to line up who you wanted to see at this point because you had all the players here, just about.
And that was also aided by the closing of WCW. What are your memories of that final Nitro, the simulcast on Raw? Was the deal to purchase WCW the right move? Who do you think would be hired at the time when you were hearing the news? And did you agree with the whole Shane buying WCW angle? So kind of four questions in there, I guess. Let's start with that night. What are your memories of that show?
Well, it started, of course, in the morning with the production meeting. in Cleveland at the Gund Arena. I think the production meeting was either at 10 or 11 o'clock, probably 11. And Vince started off the meeting. Said, well, I probably should start off with the big news. You're going to hear about it later. We completed the sale, and I bought WCW. And there were a couple of chuckles. He said it just like that. And then we all sort of look around at each other. Get the fuck out of here. No, really, I did. And then everybody started clapping. The war was over, and we had won. It was a big day. It was just a mind-blowing day. You know, you said, hey, what are your memories about this particular Raw? It was another building and another town and another show and another hotel and another flight. This was one where I pretty much remember where I was like the whole day. Every step along the way, like where I sat in the production meeting, where I, you know, what the room looked like, just how everything unfolded. It was, you know, we just kept trying to put the pieces together. And when he told us he bought it for $2 million, to answer that question, absolutely it was the right decision to buy it. I don't care what he got out of it. What he wound up getting out of it was much better than what we thought he had bought. We thought he had bought the Nitro time, like we were going to start simulcasting our two shows at once, or he was going to put a Nitro on then. We didn't know. You know what I mean? Of course, what he wound up buying for $2 million was the entire film library, which has paid him untold billions, I think, by this point. All the intellectual property, all the licenses, all the logos, trademarks, everything else. Just crazy. Using the simulcast, I remember sitting in the TV locker room, okay? And Coach was there, Brawler was there, and Harvey Whippleboom was there. Howard Finkel, I can't remember if he was there, but I definitely remember Coach, I remember Brawler, and I remember Bruno being there. So just as we're watching this whole thing unfold, and Vince comes out, and they had said that Shane and Bruce Pritchard weren't at TV. Like, they had flown to Panama City. And that was the other story, is that when we saw them the next day, what that was like, you know, what they were down there to do and what they, the way everybody treated them. And it was just like, their minds were blown. And they all, everybody treated them well. You know, it was just this mountain of ass kiss, you know, you can right. imagine, from everybody trying to make sure they had jobs. And as we're watching the simulcast unfold, I don't think we knew the creative on it, but we knew that Shane was there and that was going to be part of the announcement. So when we saw the announcement, we were just like, oh, this is awesome. We've got WCW versus WWF. What a war this is going to be. A license to print money. Hey, how'd that work out? So, but boy, $2 million for the whole library. Damn, that was awesome.
At the time, obviously, you guys weren't aware, but looking back now, not the best move, right?
It was the best move because we knew instantly, and Vince had explained this, that if he didn't buy it, that somebody else could have.
Right.
And to buy it, I guess now in retrospect, what that meant was to buy it, he could properly put a shovel across the back of its head.
Right.
And kill it once and for all. The only way to ensure that WCW was dead is if he personally killed it. The way I saw it was, as a historian, and to make sure that the, you know, and again, my naivete in all these years, that I look, you know, a businessman and a cold, you know, cold-hearted, calculating businessman, and I think that he has a warm spot for the business. I forget that sometimes he does, but I don't know if this was the case. I thought, who better to at least get the library and to be able to make sure that these matches don't wind up somewhere else,
right?
Than WWF. It makes sense. And we had joked with Vince before, because I had written The Informer, and I talked about how Vince, as The Informer, I wrote that Vince used to, he was a young man watching the space race and, you know, saw Neil Armstrong walk on the moon, and he always wanted to be an astronaut. And, well, he can't be an astronaut, you know, when he was a kid, and he, you know, had a telescope in his room and he was looking out at the stars, you know, but he does want to one day launch a satellite and have the WWF network. So, and I had written that back in like 1998 or whatever it was. And I just made it up. It was complete bullshit. But I figured, you know what? At least someday we're going to have our own channel. And Shane came down, as he was wont to do, and said, did you write The Informer? I know who did, though, but I'll pass it along. He's like, knock it off. He says, did you really? He says, you know we're going to do this someday. And I said, oh, the network thing? Yeah, I figured, why not? You know, I said, I hope you're not hot about what I wrote about your dad. He goes, no, I don't care. I just made Vince out to look like an idiot. You know what I mean? That he was, you know, some goof running around with a cardboard box in his head, you know, with the window cut out, you know, pretending to walk on the moon like, you know, like the kid in Toy Story in that opening sequence. Or, you know, once he got Buzz Lightyear, he had the cardboard box. That was Vince. Tinfoil hat. That's Vince McMahon.
I like it. I like that portrayal.
That would have been fun to look at. Speaking of the two of them, father and son, let's go to Houston. And we'll spend the next few topics on that show. What'd you think of their match at WrestleMania?
I thought it was awesome. You know, the whole drama with the family, you know, whether it was Linda coming to and the ball shot, you know, and whatever. It was justifiable homicide in this whole storyline. I was glad it was done, but it was an athletic showcase for Shane to be able to do. Give Van Damme all the credit in the world for the things that he did. He did those in an 18-foot ring.
Yep,
it's a 20-foot ring in WWF. So him going coast to coast like that, holy crap! And I don't care how much money they're paying me. I'm not going to sit there and take that garbage can shot in the face. No thanks. No thank you.
The pop when Linda stands up is one of the greatest of all time.
Oh, yeah. What a moment.
Just with the slow turnaround and the kick to the ball. I mean, how hard did Linda wind up that kick and just want to fucking boot his balls?
I don't know. You know, again, I've watched that show Scandal a lot. You know, the show on ABC with that big-lipped African-American woman. Why are her lips so swollen all the time? Is that because she has injections, or are they just naturally like that? You know who I'm talking about?
Nope.
Scandal? ABC?
I know it's a hot show. I have not seen it.
You should get me out neither. More. Anyway.
I should get out more to watch the show?
Yeah, she's...
I watch a lot of TV. I don't need another show right now.
Oh, yeah. It's a good show. But anyway,
it's great.
Every couple... Right, the president, the president and first lady, complete sham marriage. Right, they don't love each other; they're just there for convenience in the pictures. Right, vice president, woman on the show, her husband, gay, closeted gay, has an affair with the president's chief of staff's husband, who's gay, and then she winds up stabbing him, and they cover it all up, and you know she's the doting widow now. But that's what I always thought of Vince and Linda. And I think about when I watch that show, I think about them.
Sounds like fun.
It's Bill and Hillary.
It's
a marriage of convenience. That there's been so many bad things that have happened that they're just cohabitating and exist. I don't know if that's the case at all. They could be the most loving couple. I certainly have never seen it. But again, that could be what they're like. But I always just got that Bill and Hillary image and. You know, and when I see that show Scandal, that makes me think of Vincent Linda.
You watch The Americans, Kevin? It's coming back soon.
No, what is that?
That was a show you should watch. It's on FX. It's set in the 80s. Russian spies are undercover as an American family. It's got Kerry Russell.
Ooh, Kerry Russell.
Yes, and she is excellent in the show. I highly recommend it. I think you will like it a lot.
Okay.
So if you can try and find season one somewhere. Season two starting like early February on FX.
I just got that Google Chromecast.
Mm-hmm.
What a great device that is! Because I don't have internet TV on my TV, but just man, it's so awesome from your phone, from your laptop, from your tablet, ping. You know, any YouTube video that I'm watching because I watch old wrestling, instantly I'm able to put it onto my television.
You'd be able to subscribe to the Dota Network that way.
It might be the only way you get to see it.
Yes. All right. That's a story for another day. What are your memories of another very memorable match at WrestleMania 17? The Gimmick Battle Royal. This a lot of people thought this was an April Fool's joke because, of course, WrestleMania was on April 1st, and we didn't think it was actually going to happen, and we were thrilled to see it actually go down. The only sad part for me, Akeem had lost too much weight and couldn't fit in the Akeem suit and had to be the one-man gang. I always loved Akeem even more. But what are your memories of the Gimmick Battle Royal? Awesome, awesome match, right?
Just the fact that they called it the Gimmick Battle Royal, yeah. Which was a kind of a Pat Patterson saying. You know, oh, he's such a gimmick. You know, that's the way Pat would talk. And so that's where the name came from. And so they brought back all these characters to do this Gimmick Battle Royal. And, of course, you know, having Bobby Heenan out there mm-hmm. to announce it was wonderful. And his line about Sheik, you know, it might be WrestleMania 37 before he gets down the ring. He had to win because he couldn't get thrown over the top rope.
Crazy.
So it was just – it was awesome.
Who were you really, like – who did you – what gimmick, just as a fan, were you like the most thrilled to see in that match?
Well, Heenan, because I got to meet him for the first time, and I was just floored. You know, I got to meet Kamala, so that was kind of cool. I got
the
to
goon.
See them. Well, the goon I remembered. You know what I mean? That
right.
was, he was there when I started.
Duke Jirose.
Yeah, no, I didn't care about him. Sheik, Sheik, of course. How do you not love Sheik?
Hey, who was so, the who was the gobbledygooker on that night?
That is a good question.
Oh,
I don't remember.
Was it Guerrero?
Some Guerrero.
Was he actually? Was it him?
Was Chavo back?
No, not Chavo. The rumors were it was.
It was Hector.
Or Hector. Hector. Yeah. I mean Hector.
Did he play it on that night? You don't remember.
He might have. He might have. You know what? I have to think about that.
Okay.
I can't remember. But getting to see Kamala, you know, because Kamala was one of those images from my childhood, you know, that you know my young. Early, you know, 11, 12-year-old preteen years, you know, seeing that character develop. Somebody I was always, you know, thought was cool. Getting to meet the gang was great. You know, it was just, it was neat to see those old guys, you know, kind of reminisce and, you know, slap each other on the back and have some ha-ha and some fun and eat catering and enjoy a good day and have fun. You know, that was kind of what I remembered.
How was
I got to see Lombardi as Kimchi. That was cool.
Cool to see John Tenta. It was kind of like his last hurrah before he got sick, right?
Yeah, right. Sad.
How was Bobby and Mean Gene backstage? I mean, they must have been on cloud nine.
Oh my God, Okerlund was awesome. Okerlund still is awesome.
Hey,
Just genuinely one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. And, you know, you hear stories about like Vin Scully and how great he is. I'd put Okerlund in that category. It's just so nice. Yeah. It makes you feel like, you know, you're his best friend and he's known you for 20 years. That long time, close personal friend, you know, that line that he would always say, that's what he made you feel like.
How about Bobby? Bobby wasn't happy and... It's pretty well documented his time in WCW, at least in the end, was less than fun. He must have been like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, he looked like he had just gotten out on parole.
Yeah, he was on fire that night too. That was great. Why did they keep him around?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Seemed like a no-brainer.
Right. It can be very frustrating if you start to think about the reasons why things were done or not done.
Did he not fit the product, you think?
Maybe.
They could have found a spot for him.
Oh, my gosh. How did they not? I didn't understand. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but just there were so many bad decisions made
mm-hmm.
along the way, and that was one of them. I was there when they brought Scott Hudson in for their – for the audition to call the match that he wound up calling that basically that was pretty much it, right? Him and Arn, they did a couple of matches and then that was it. He did a great job on his audition.
Mm-hmm.
What a nice guy.
Yep.
Super talented announcer. But again, that wasn't because Scott Hudson was brought in. It was just, they just wanted to kill it. that's all I could go back to, is that they just wanted to kill it. They staffed up to have, you know, separate live event crews and then wound up letting people go.
So weird. We'll say that for the second half. We got to really dissect the invasion. But yeah, Scott, obviously, we had him on the show, and he was fantastic to chat with. Interesting guy. Not even just his wrestling stuff, but also his other job in the law field.
Oh, yeah, he's in the legal field, and he's got a hell of a lot better stories than he does about wrestling.
Yeah, he was a fantastic guest. All right, Scott, you're up.
Well, let's talk about a match you mentioned earlier, and of course, fitting I ask it. And that is, of course, Undertaker defeating Triple H to keep the streak going, although at the time, the streak was not really talked about. Was there any truth that Hunter was going to indeed beat Taker on that night and Shawn Michaels was supposed to help? And what happened on that SmackDown before when Shawn came in pretty much a mess?
Time to play the game!
But it didn't happen. What was up with Shawn? Why don't we say it like that? What was up with Shawn?
That, I think, was that in Detroit? Help me. I can't remember.
The SmackDown? I'll look it up. Go ahead.
Okay.
If that was the time where, because again, I think Shawn had gotten sent home more than once. I can't remember.
Well, he was at, I think he was at Raw, but that got bumped. He got bumped because of the Nitro shit. They had to make time. So then he was supposed to be on SmackDown, as the story goes, and he showed up all fucked up, and that's when Hunter allegedly told him to leave, and Shawn flipped out, saying, you know,
yes,
he stabbed him in the back.
That was Detroit.
Yes, it was. Yep.
And yeah, and it was, it's one of those things, like, you just, during the day, there's not a lot to do. So you'd mill around and you kind of wait for things, and you're like, oh, I'm going to go in the arena for a while. Oh, I guess I'll go backstage. And I happened to walk through the tunnel at the Joe Louis Arena as sort of this was unfolding. And again, you can tell when people are on pills because you can see the look in their eye and the words that are coming out of their mouth just aren't connecting. And so, yeah, he was being told that he needed to go. So I quickly got out of the way of that. And but, yeah, I don't think he took it very well at all. Did that change the outcome of the match? I don't know. But that was where the streak started to get talked about, because I wrote the notes for WrestleMania and I fed the lines to the announcers. Not fed them, but I wrote the notes. Mm-hmm. And I had uncovered, hey, The Undertaker's never been beaten at WrestleMania. So that was where they started with the whole streak.
That's a great sleuthing right there, Kevin, for you to piece that one together. That was a lot of hard work went into that plan.
Shut up, you one.
Hey, guys, hey, guess what? I went through all the history books, and in 5 matches, this guy's never lost.
Well, what are you doing? You're trying to write VO notes for the announcers to give them something to talk about. That's it. Don't jump up and down. But yeah, so that was where they really started to talk about the streak, where they had never really talked about it before, because it hadn't been talked about. So that was it. I don't take credit for the streak.
All right, Columbo. A-hole.
All right, Colton.
Anyway, thoughts on the Austin?
It got ugly fast, huh?
Yeah, things got out of hand. You're gonna have Hunter Criscolo over there dragging you out soon. So, all right, thoughts: Austin Rock, the match, and of course the heel turn. I was at SmackDown in Providence 2 weeks before. They had that crazy long sit down interview, which was really good, but it sucked being in the arena for it. That's where Austin made the statement that he needed the belt more than anything. What did you think of the heel turn, the feud, the match? Did you like the power trip idea? What was the feeling with Rock leaving? And do you think the heel turn should have happened the next night?
No, the heel turn should have happened a year before. But Austin had been hurt, so it changed the plans of everything. It was supposed to happen the year before. The way it was done, it was brilliant. Unfortunately, it happened, and then the next night, Rock wrestled his last match and then said goodbye to go to Hollywood. So over the span of 48 hours, we lost the two biggest babyfaces ever in the history of wrestling.
Right.
We turned one heel, and one left the company. And then, and business went down, and then by May, on May 9th, 2001, I get a call from Jim Ross, who says, hey, listen, business is way down. And we're having to make cuts, and we're going to have to let you go. I'm like, no, I don't want to be fired. I do a lot of stuff there. I'll be in tomorrow and we'll talk about it. I basically refused to be fired. And I wound up sticking around like till March of 2003.
Not bad.
They were like, yeah, well, you're right. You do a lot of stuff here, so we won't fire you now. Whew. Dodge that bullet. But yeah, that was the reason why. Because you know, if you would have had Rock as the babyface foil on the chase for the heel Austin, it would have been so much better, as opposed to what we had with, you know, Triple H glomming onto Austin and just here, Steve, we're going to turn you heel and then tie the biggest anchor around your leg ever.
Should they have turned Hunter face immediately that night too? Because I mean, the crowd goes nuts when he comes down to make the save.
Yeah, that's absolutely what they should have done, because you had to have somebody for Steve to fight. And instead, we got the two-man power trip. There was a reason why they split The Undertaker and Kane, right? Because nobody was going to beat them. And it was the same thing here. Who was going to beat them? But at least with the babyfaces, you would cheer them. With these guys, it's like, I don't want to go to the arena. I don't want to spend my money. I don't want to see these guys. I don't want to boo Steve Austin. Where's The Rock? And who's that big blonde-haired guy with the 8-foot-long nose that's around Steve Austin's leg? Oh, that's Triple H.
Speak for yourself. I was there.
So, you were the one buying the two-man power trip t-shirts, right?
Bet your ass I was.
Yeah, I know it.
And I have one.
Backing up, Kevin, though, just leading into the match itself, though, what did you think of the build for Austin Rock itself, with the whole Austin just being maniacal, obsessed with the title? I mean, everything seemed to thread and make sense, right?
In hindsight, yes. But, you know, just the My Way song, the way they did that video, to me, that was the best build that had ever been done for the big match. It was bigger than... let's see, the only other one was Shawn and Austin with Tyson in the corner, I think. That was as big, because certainly Rock and Austin the next year wasn't as big. And then by the time we got to 17, I mean, look, we sold out the Astrodome, 70,000 tickets, you know. So, and it was just great to see, like, the young production assistants, you know, come out of the truck, and because the trucks were inside the building, because that Astrodome is so huge, the way it's, you know, kind of configured is the trucks could be in the building and you still had the full field to play with. And you know, I remember two girls coming out of the production truck, and they were just looking at the crowd, and they were just like arm in arm, because they were just like, wow, you know, and they had their badges on, and they couldn't believe that they had worked on a show that was this big. Holy crap, you know. And I stood there with the Haas brothers and talked about, you know, them make it a goal, make it a plan. Okay, visualize this. Okay, what's the goal to be at WrestleMania next year? Okay, then let's start working towards that. So, that's always like, as far as my memory banks go, you know, that's kind of where the memories start to fade off. So the next few retrospectives with me aren't going to be as good. I'm going to tell you already.
We're going to drag it out of you.
Because after May 9, which, by the way, is my birthday, when Jim Ross calls you on your birthday to say that you're going to lose your job, you don't feel as good about getting up and going to work when you got to go to work every day and hope not get fired.
Well, I want you to watch every episode of TV and every pay-per-view before the next time we talk to you. It'll be refreshed.
Oh, crap.
A lot of work for you.
Well, as JR mentioned earlier, we were probably in the best stretch in the history of the company, in terms of pay-per-views, in terms of TV. Do you believe that? And do you think WrestleMania 17 was the greatest WrestleMania of all time?
Gosh, I have to think so. The best one of my tenure there. We never had The Rock and Austin at their peak again. So, yeah, that was the biggest one. You know, you got, you know, The Undertaker, you got Triple H coming out to Motorhead. You got all the new guys. You got the TLC match. You got all the new guys that were really making their debut for the first time at WrestleMania. And the undercard was a little bit clunky. There was some, you know, because again, there was some pieces, parts that didn't quite all fit together. Like, Raven. Was it Raven Test Rhino?
No, it was Raven Kane and Big Show. That was the good one. That was when
Raven
they...
Kane Big Show. That was good.
Test and Eddie.
Test and Eddie was good. That's right. No, wait, wasn't that a three-way?
No.
No.
What were they fighting for?
European title.
That's right.
And then you had Jericho Regal for the IC.
And
the Right to
Censor
pretty much got squashed at that night.
Yeah, and you had Benoit Angle,
mm-hmm. Yep,
which was great. Wasn't there – now, what was Rhino's deal on that show?
He just was involved in the TLC.
Yeah. Everybody had a second that night. The Dudleys had
Spike.
Edge and Christian had Rhino, and the Hardys had Lita.
That's right. I always liked the fact it was how the WWF, when I was there, they all went out of their way to make sure that everybody hold on. The hell is that? Did you hear that?
Nope.
What, did the cat bite something else now?
No. I think he's dead. It was just some video that came up here on the, because I've been having computer issues. Anyway, always liked how WWF tried to make sure that everybody got on the show for a payday.
Do you think this was the most loaded star-powered roster in company or even wrestling history? This stretch from like January till Mania?
Yeah.
I mean,
really was.
Everyone was there and healthy for such a, it's a brief moment in time. But we'll even call it December, from like December to Mania. Just all the main event players are there and healthy.
It's an enormous time, and one that was never, you know, you might have big stadium shows back in the day, you know, where you could bring in different champions from different territories, you know, like, I remember there was a show, Battle of the Belts, in Florida in the stadium, and, you know, it was like, Superstar Billy Graham was WWF champion back in the day, and you know, the NWA champion, Harley Race, et cetera, et cetera. Those are, you had events like that, but this was everybody under one roof, and you had the WCW guys, you know, Lance Storm, et cetera, sitting in the stands watching, and they were on deck next. Unfortunately, that wasn't exactly Murderer's Row, because if I remember correctly, like Sean Stasiak was in that group, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
You think it's weird they had him way up in the skybox, like in the middle of nowhere? It's very awkward.
It was, well, it was not a, again, when you're in a football stadium that wasn't exactly made with the current model of luxury seats in mind, those club level seats are way far away. So it wasn't necessarily TV friendly, but it was the best spot to put them in so that they look like stars. You didn't want them sitting amongst the rabble. You know,
should have had him on the Mean Street Posse's couch at ringside.
That's right.
That would have been good.
All right. So you mentioned before how the ratings started to sink a little bit. Why was the decision to go back to Taker and Kane on top? I remember there was a lot of hand-wringing on the internet at the time that they weren't going to Jericho and Benoit or anyone fresh, that we were going all the way back to Taker and Kane again to feud with Triple H and Austin.
Isn't that always the biggest thing?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the issue that we've talked about, you know, more than once here on this show, is that there was a hesitancy to give those guys the ball, to let them run with the ball? But you hired them, Vince. You bought them. Why wouldn't you allow them to come in and do what they want to do? I don't know. So, yeah, very frustrating. Very, very frustrating. Nothing wrong with Taker and Kane. Nothing wrong with them at all. But could we have something fresh? Could we have something new? So,
what are your thoughts on Taker at this time? Because he seemed to be a little out of shape. I feel like this is a time where the news and the rumors were heavily that he was kind of being at his political height backstage. I don't know if it's true or it's just all anecdotal and was all, you know, bullshit. But it seemed like he didn't have many fans at the time other than just, you know, the general.
His body was really breaking down, though. The fact that he was able to continue on through the years that he did is a miracle of modern medicine. His body was breaking down heavily by this point, so he had to be very careful with what he could do. there was nothing negative. There's not one negative thing to say about The Undertaker. And that's from somebody that worked with him. Always got along well with him. I always liked him. Always had tremendous respect for him. And he never was crappy to anybody that I ever saw.
That's comforting to know.
Really. Not it never threw his weight around, never said, I don't want to do this. You know,
a lot to throw around at that point, too.
Well, he was trying to do different things to change his body. And if you can't lift and you can't work out because your hips and your nerves are so shot that you can't do it, it's very, it's difficult.
Another guy on the roster who had some questionable situations on.
Hello?
That's we have a streak going now. It's consecutive podcasts where the X Factor theme is played.
Oh.
What were your thoughts on X Factor as a group and X-Pac status in the company? Is there any truth to the, speaking of political machinations, that he didn't mind losing on pay-per-view as long as he won on Raw because there were more people watching Raw? And do you believe in the term, and JR and I have talked about this extensively, X-Pac heat?
Huh. No, I hate that
yes,
term.
Yes, thank you.
I absolutely hate that term.
It's awful.
Because it was legitimate heat. Now, could he have done different things to change his act, to freshen up his presentation, to do more than what he did? Well, of course he could have. But he was getting a reaction. He was frustrating fans. He was doing his job as a heel.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't agree with that term X-Pac heat at all.
Thank God.
It's, it's like, I don't care what they're saying about me as long as they're spelling my name right, in the newspapers. It's the same thing. It's a reaction. Music hits. Oh, I hate this guy. I want to see him get his ass kicked. Oh, get him off of my TV. Yay, he's getting his ass kicked. Oh, that son of a bitch. He stole the win. God, I hate that guy. You know, we were in an era, too, where we were getting feedback from AOL, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'd just, poll the fans after the show. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. If the heel won the main event, show would be thumbs down. Horrible. What are you guys doing? Worst show ever. Babyface wins the main event. Awesome. Loved it. Best show ever. Didn't matter what the show was or the quality of the undercard. It just depended on who won the main event. So, and that wasn't 100% to zero, zero to 100, but that would influence the voting because you would just see how, hey, it's a great show. It's 55-45 thumbs up. We had Triple H win in the end. It happened more than once. So
98 that was thumbs up, 2 thumbs down.
Right, sure.
Something was
wow. This one IP address is consistent with the S's. What?
You're assuming you even knew what the internet was in 2000. Which
what?
I don't,
Who?
I don't think you did.
I was mailing. I was the self-addressed stamped envelope.
Yes. Is there anything, Kevin, to the whole lose on pay-per-view, win on TV thing? Because it seemed to happen often with him.
Never heard it, but I love the idea. Think about it. But what does it do? It makes people pay. If you think about it in terms of we're giving them TV for free, but we're making them pay to see the match on pay-per-view. We're going to build the heat for free, but then we're going to make you pay to see the payoff. If that's the theory, I can't argue with it at all. It's exactly right.
Discuss Eddie Guerrero this time. He never really seemed to break through the way everyone hoped. And then in May, left for rehab. Was he falling apart backstage? Were you disappointed in his run at that time when it left? Because it looked like he was going to be a star when he came in and then just kind of quickly ended up not doing much at all.
Yeah, it was frustrating, of course. And, I'd seen a couple of episodes away from the arena, just some things where it's like back at the hotel and, you probably want to get him back to his room, not good. And when you hire guys, and I think it's a different era now, probably wasn't the same level of due diligence done on that type of thing done then. But the industry is a lot different now. So, but Eddie was able to get the help that he needed. And, you know, it's great because he at least had a few more years before he died. And I'm one that believes he was probably doing something when he died, just for having a massive heart attack. I don't know whether it was cumulative from all the things that he had done, or he was back doing something, whether or not it was, you know, drugs, or whether it was just steroids, who knows what, I don't know, but it was just something that always crawled. And again, he's dead. It's not like I'm tainting his memory. It is what it is. So, but you always wanted to see Eddie happy and healthy. And I was glad at least when he came back, I got to see that.
What happened to China? Was it just the end of the line for her? Was there a specific moment, incident that finally realized, all right, she's useless now? Or what happened with her at the end?
It's not like I could even say the wheels fell off. It isn't like that at all. It was just, boy, she thought she was worth something that she wasn't worth. I've never known anybody to completely misread the market the way she did. So, she really thought that she was worth more than what she was. And it had Hollywood aspirations. It was amazing that when she had all that surgery done and that everybody said how beautiful she was, I think it changed her. I think it went to her head, you know, because for the first time in her life, she was a pretty girl. And so, yeah. But again, it was time for her to go.
Use of tables. I'm sorry, God. We gonna say
no,
something?
Super nice, though. Used to, you know, travel with her from time to time. Used to ride with her. Always great. Just, again, whenever somebody isn't happy or whenever somebody thinks they're worth more than they are worth, I think they should go. Because you can't make them happy for less. You can't say, well, listen, you think you're worth five and you're really worth, you know, you think you're worth six or more and you're only worth three. I can't make you happy if I give you four, but in my own mind, I can't give you six. So we probably should just go. We should probably just part now and you go out there and make me regret my decision. So.
The use of tables needed to keep the heat on the Dudley. It seemed like they were losing a lot of matches over the last year, dating back to mid 2000. Was it kind of a lazy tactic just saying, oh, we'll let him get the heat back, put the guy through a table after? Seemed kind of counterproductive. They lose and then put the guy through a table and that was it.
The use of the tables certainly was a crutch for the Dudleys? Was it something that made them different than anybody else? Because it wound up becoming their calling card and the only thing that they were known for after a while. But certainly what they did, like, you know, putting Mae Young through the table and Stacy through the table and everything else that they had done, that's memorable. You know, those are memorable moments. So in Devon, get the tables. People still say that to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I know Scott says that whenever he goes to the restaurant.
Nice. Yeah, I think it was a great tool in getting them over. And all that stuff kind of happened, you know, a year and a half earlier. By this point, it felt like it was almost through the motions. Like, all right, we don't even give a shit to see you wrestle. Let's get the fucking table and get out of here. Like that. It almost felt like that way after a while, you know?
Which becomes the... When you do something so much that people, and then it just becomes the thing,
right?
You know, so anyway, frustrating. Yeah, you'd like, because again, they were a great team, but you could see how quickly that once we had the brand extension, how quick they were to snatch those guys apart and make them go do something else. Mm. So, but I think that was a byproduct of, well, we're so sick of them because of the whole table thing. Well, you guys told them to do the tables thing. You couldn't come up with anything else to do.
Well, another guy who had a change of attitude, if you will, was Rikishi. That heel turn ran its course. What were your thoughts on him turning back face from pretty big hot face run in 2000. And do you think turning heel was a success or a failure?
No, it was a failure. It didn't work. I don't think anybody ever took him seriously. Yeah, it was always great to see him come back, and that was who he was going to be. He was such a nice, likable guy with a big ass. So I think there were a lot of us that had hoped, that had wanted to see him be successful, but it didn't happen, and I think probably all of us were like, yeah, you know, probably was a bad idea, but at least we tried it. You know what I mean? We can't say we didn't try it, but yeah, so needed to turn back.
It was all that stupid thong. Should have changed his costume. thoughts on the Benoit angle series? They had the three-match series, Mania, Backlash, Judgment Day. Just what did you think of the whole series and the blow-off with Angle capping that off by regaining his medals that had been stored in Benoit's tights?
I could watch those three matches over and over and over and over again and never get tired of them. So I think in a lot of respects, other than the obvious steroid use, they are blueprints for, you know, for young guys watching the business, learning how to wrestle, being able to incorporate mat wrestling, believability, and then storytelling and athleticism. So both guys were just monstrously gassed to the gills, and that's not a good thing. But everything else is absolutely perfect in what it should be.
Night after Judgment Day in San Jose, the awesome Power Trip took on Benoit and Jericho for the tag titles. Of course, Benoit and Jericho won the match, and then we had the very heart-wrenching injury that occurred that night. How great was that match? And what was the fallout of Hunter popping his quad? And how did it affect the angle going forward?
Well, one of the best matches that we ever had on Raw. And just a damn shame that it happened. I don't know how it affected things. I don't know how the story was going to end. But it threw, because it was probably the biggest injury, like you had said. Everybody had gone through WrestleMania so healthy, and we had just this amazing run from January on, you know, where all these guys were here and et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, we lost The Rock, but boy, we got all these new guys here, and then boom, torn quad. Okay, so now over the course of 3 months, we've turned Steve, we've lost Triple H, and we've lost The Rock. Okay, some of these new guys have got to step up. I don't quite know what the where the story was going to end, but it really affected things. You know, do you, Scott, do you replay that in your, I don't mean like on your VCR, because I know you have one, but I mean in your mind's eye, in your memory bank, do you write this down in your memory journal? Is this, how does this affect your life on a day-to-day basis? Because I know it does.
I didn't watch another minute of wrestling for the rest of the year, so I don't even, I'm looking forward to the second half of 2001 because I didn't watch anything. To me, the company should have closed. No, I'm just kidding. No.
He remembers the rehab process. He was there to help nurture.
That's right. Held the videos, he was doing the knee lifts. Yep.
Do you still get chills when you hear U2's "A Beautiful Day"?
Absolutely, I do. There's no doubt about it. Yep, I do.
Did you ever retrace the steps and sit at that same booth at the Lonely Diner that he ate at?
Yes, I did. Yeah, the Lonely Diner. No, I thought it was a TGI Fridays or something, or an Applebee's or something like that.
No, it's a much better story if it's called the Lonely Diner. Like the that's lonely, on
the Lonely Diner.
It's funny, that's Scott's nickname.
tragic.
There's a little bit of Scott inside Triple H, too, from where, well, there's a lot of Scott. You left a little, I thought when they cut open the knee, and you were,
this is not Drew Carey's pay-per-view, not
you were in the, you were in the hospital room with him when they sliced his knee open, and you left a little memento in there.
God!
So there'll always be a piece of you inside.
Just stop.
No, it was like that Seinfeld episode with the junior
mint. The junior
mint. You dropped the junior mint, and that was from you.
He left one of his Triple H custom thongs in there.
His knee was minty fresh.
Oh boy! All right. Did the company lose faith in Benoit and Jericho leading into King of the Ring? They kind of booked them strong. They had that great week of TV where Austin wrestled Benoit and Jericho on back-to-back shows in Canada. And then the storyline heading into King of the Ring quickly shifted to Austin being obsessed with Vince not being there and the whole WCW thing with is the champion going to jump. And it seemed like by the time they got to King of the Ring, if you watch that show, they completely were like not even really focusing on Benoit and Jericho as much as they were Vince and Austin.
Was the – wait a minute now. Mm-hmm. When did he get the neck injury?
That was – well, at King of the Ring is when it blew up and he had to leave. I know he was dinged up heading into that. I mean, you tell us, was it known going into there?
Didn't he have the match with Steve on TV in Edmonton?
Yeah.
That was before that show.
No, but that was where it was.
Was it that or was it the TLC match? Because I've also heard that one. The TLC, the SmackDown one.
I don't see – well, okay. I think it may have been on – it may have been going. Because there was no that night in Edmonton, there was no bigger star than Chris Benoit.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I remember standing next to Lance Storm watching in the monitor. I said, in a city that has great sports heroes, you know, with Wayne Gretzky at the top of the heap, there's no bigger sports star in this town right now than Chris Benoit as he stood above the ropes. You know, I don't know what else you could have done. And I think there was real concern about his neck being bad. So I think it was, cumulative injury that leads to that type of surgery is generally not, you know what I mean? It's cumulative. It's not mm-hmm. something that's a cause and effect. I heard it on Tuesday, therefore my surgery is on Wednesday.
Right.
It's, God, man, this is years of things that have been just grinding and now I have numbness in my arm and I can't feel it and I can't lift and my arm's getting noticeably smaller. So I think that was it.
Okay.
I don't think there was anybody souring on anybody.
Well, that's good because I know the ratings were down and it seemed like all of a sudden they were focusing on Vince and Austin. So, but yeah, that makes sense that Benoit was hurting and they wanted to pull back. So,
well, anytime Vince is away from television for more than 5 minutes, USA freaks out. Now, were they on USA at the time or was it TNN?
TNN.
All right, so never mind. But it used to be that anytime Vince isn't on, the ratings are down, we need Vince. That was always their fallback. So. But that's not the case here.
Was Edge the right guy to win the King of the Ring tournament? Should they have established him more? Because he kind of went from being in the tag team with Christian to, oh my God, he won the King of the Ring. Should they have kind of established him more as a guy that was about to start a singles career? Or was it fine the way they did it? And at this stage, being what, the ninth, I guess, King of the Ring pay-per-view, had it run its course as a concept?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there were more misses than hits at this point with the King of the Ring. But again, Rock leaves, Austin turns, Triple H hurt, Chris Benoit gone. We need somebody to step up. So we better start making somebody new. We better start elevating somebody. And let's do it with Edge. Yeah, he's breaking out. He's coming out of the pack. He's going to be a singles guy. So... no problem with that decision at all.
Was Shane versus Kurt necessary in this show? It seemed like violence for the sake of violence. The angle scene thrown together at the last minute. You get all the craziness with Shane getting thrown through the glass and everything else. And it just seemed like at a time where everyone was getting hurt, did we really need this manic match?
There are times that we thought about, you know, in the run that, God, we could have killed somebody.
Mm-hmm. That's one of them.
And that's definitely one of them. Definitely one where it's like, Jesus, what were we thinking? So, yeah, bad as it got. Right there. Just, oof.
I mean, that show as a whole was like, I remember the weeks leading out of it was just everyone got hurt. Like, Kurt got hurt pretty bad, I think, in that night. Austin, if you remember, broke his hand and his tailbone and Booker T threw him through the table. Yeah, Benoit getting hurt. It just seemed like all of a sudden everyone was dinged up coming off of that show.
Yeah, that didn't exactly speed the process of elevating Booker T to the top of the card, did it?
No, definitely not. What did you think of that? Was that a cool surprise?
Cool surprise that you instantly knew was a horrible mistake. And it was like, oh, God, he's done.
Yeah.
He's done. You know? Like when Dr. Death Steve Williams got knocked out in the, you know, in the brawl for all.
Right.
You just knew it. That's it. He's done. You hurt Steve. Goodbye. bye-bye. So.
What was up with the DDP Taker stuff? I mean, it was an awesome reveal on Raw when he was the Stalker, and then Taker just squashes the shit out of him at King of the Ring in not even a match, and seemingly just kind of killed him out of the gate.
I don't know. Now, in an era that, okay, so you would think, here's a company that now we've lost Rock, we've turned Austin, we've lost Benoit, we've lost Triple H. Don't we need stars? And instead, we were using stars to make established stars even bigger, which I didn't understand. I'm the opposite. I'm an elevator goes up guy. So didn't understand it, didn't know what it was. Never will be able to explain it. But cool reveal. Not the right thing for DDP. He's a good guy. We wanted him to be some creepy stalker with Taker's wife. Give me a break.
Well, it would have been fine if he, you know, because they ended up saying, I was just doing this to piss you off so I could become famous, which was a fine angle. They weren't really making him to be creepy after. But I think they need to either debut someone else or have. I mean, he had to get the upper hand on Taker here. Like, it just made him look like a fool.
How did they not just have the Smells Like Teen Spirit ripoff music, self high five, here he comes?
Right.
It's freaking DDP.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about this too long and hard. So I never understood it.
All right. Before we wrap up, I have a theory for you in regards to King of the Ring of 2001.
And Scott Griscolo?
Yes.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on if they would have had a WCW guy enter the tournament?
Hold it! Frickin' cat! Hold your theory!
This has to make Michael Vincent's cat compilation.
Son of a bitch! Anyway. All right.
You need Battle Cat instead.
Ooh, Brady Boone.
Yeah, there you go. And if you want to hear more about Battle Cat, we talked to Brian Shields on Monday night about funny and weird and crazy gimmicks from wrestling history. You know who Brian Shields is?
No, never heard of him.
He is the author of the WWE Encyclopedia.
Good for him.
Worked for Acclaim during your video game time. Anyway, nice guy. WCW King of the Ring. What if they would have had Shane McMahon purchase a slot in the tournament and he enters one of his guys and they win it? And now you're like, wow, this is a big part of the takeover. This is the first blow WCW has landed. They've taken the crown away. The king of the WWF is now a WCW star. And I got two guys in mind. Lance Storm or Mike Awesome.
Lance Storm would have been the better guy.
Right? Wouldn't he have been great in that role? Because he had just come from WCW, he had all the titles and everything, and he comes right in and wins the crown, and he's the king of the World Wrestling Federation under the WCW banner.
That's a great idea, one that I never heard of before, I love that idea.
I feel like that really would have gotten the feud off, too, because then you still go to the next night in MSG, and you have Awesome come in and win the hardcore title, and now you're making two huge strikes out of the gate.
Sure. But you had both of those guys quickly become ECW guys.
Right.
So, but I see the point, and I like it.
Okay.
So then you use WWF to grow WCW, and then to have him flip to ECW.
Yeah, and the King of the Ring thing.
Maybe that becomes kind of the tug of war with Lance Storm.
Right.
Which way is he going to go? ECW, WCW? Either way, it's a shot across the bow on the WWF.
And King of the Ring was, as we just talked about, Scott said, was a dying concept anyway. Edge, I mean, did it make Edge any more than he could have been made anyway? No, so it's like we lost out on a big, a big push or anything if we would have done.
I'll give you the example. How much, you know, we didn't go for years on it, but didn't Ring of Honor look kind of bad in the whole Scum feud? Didn't they pretty much just hand ROH their ass?
Yeah.
Isn't that the point? Eventually, Ring of Honor is going to win the feud.
Right.
I don't understand. We had to put ourselves in jeopardy to make it look like, to get to Steel Cage Warfare. Otherwise, what's the point? I never understood that philosophy. But the idea that you came up with, I never heard that idea before. There were probably 1,000 other ideas just like that were thrown out at the cumulative force of, you know, television writing at that time. So.
All right, Scott, anything else on your end before we wrap up?
No, I think we've got everything covered. First 6 months of 2001 are in the can.
That's a brisk and very informative chat there, mm-hmm. Kevin. So we'll got to wrap up, Scott. Of course, we'll be back next week with our big third annual Christmas Spectacular as we wrap up the year here, Place to Be Podcast.
Now, and I want to let you guys in on a little surprise for next week.
Ooh. Oh.
I will be a part of next week's show.
Yeah. That's news to us.
I'm telling you, it's a big surprise.
It's a big salad. No, that is a great news, Kevin Kelly, on the Christmas Spectacular. Just another reason to turn into it.
Yes. Exactly. And listen, I'm working on, and I'm going to put him on the spot right now. I'm working on getting Steve Corino for you guys as a guest.
Boom. Major announcement right there for you.
There we go.
So Carino's going to be on this show at some date and time to be determined. He just doesn't know it yet. But when he does know it, he'll do it.
And you think I marked out over CRZ, Christopher Robin Zimmerman. I'm going to be just pooping my pants with Steve Corino.
Cat's running over his microphone.
Yes.
So he's got a new baby, so he's got it worse. This is just a kitten that I have here in my house.
Well, he's got a lot of free time. You know, he's up at 3 a.m. anyway right now, so he's good. He, I want to meet Carino in Pittsburgh. Can we make that happen?
Yes.
Awesome.
He doesn't get formats, by the way.
He shouldn't. He doesn't need it. He's too talented. He can do it on the fly. I am his biggest PR person. All right, let's wrap things up. You can hear Kevin Kelly each and every week. Check your local listings, Ring of Honor Television, the voice of Ring of Honor. And you can catch him here, his full archive at placetobenation.com. Kevin, did you know we had our 1,000th article up today since we started in June? And it involved you. We put up a Best of Kevin Kelly podcast retrospective. It's number, post number 1,000.
I love that, and I do like how one of your readers remarked on the fact that I referred to Ken Shamrock as kind of shady.
Yes. That's an all-time Kevin quote there. Just topping the political debate with John Walters, of course. All right. Anyway. So let's wrap things up. Listen to Kevin each and every week, Ring of Honor. He'll be back here, hopefully in January. We'll preview the big Pittsburgh show. We have you on, and we'll talk some more about Steve Corino. So until next week, Scott, with the Christmas show, that is Scott. I'm Justin. That's Kevin. We're out of here. Talk to you next week. Have a great weekend, everyone. No snarkiness? I can't end the show without a snarky comment.
Yeah. Oh. Want me to feed in some, fill in some snarky?
Yeah, you can do it right now. We're still going.
All right. Wait, what? All right.
You would never survive on Drew Carey's comedy improv.
I got nothing. No, I wanted to let you in clean. Mr. Grinch scheming, Duke stay conniving. Yeah. He stay scheming when you thinking he not looking over your shoulder, peeping everything that you got. Busta Rhymes, I will get.